Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, economist Richard Wolff shows how the rich made themselves richer still by plundering American workers, and why the scam can't last much longer. I hope you'll stay tuned. We live in a managed democracy, to quote Sheldon Wallen. To keep themselves on top, the elite manage us average Joes and average Janes. Otherwise, we might use our democratic power to change the system that is oppressing us. A big part of the art of managing us is controlling the way we understand our reality. Here's a personal example. I never heard the term working class until I got to college. Much to my surprise, I discovered that I was in it. We thought we were middle class. My father was a blue-collar worker, my mother a part-time secretary. My parents owned a small house and a used car. My father had a steady job. There's a concept from back in the 1950s, a steady job. His was repairing home appliances for Westinghouse. Years later, in a political science class in college, I learned that families like mine were nowhere near the middle class. The actual middle class had tons more money than we did, and somewhat more political power. We were clearly working class. Even so, working class life in the 1950s and 60s was a good deal better than it is now. For white people, at any rate, and back then that was a good-sized majority, in the 1950s and 60s there was such a thing as a steady job with decent pay. Health insurance was affordable and close to universal. Wrap your head around that. The insurance industry set up Blue Cross Blue Shield to head off socialized medicine. Blue Cross Blue Shield was non-profit, and practically every business offered this coverage as a benefit to employees. Employers also offered real pension plans, not 401k scams. Also paid vacations and paid sick leave. When profits went up, wages went up. Unions were strong. And when you worked for a company, you worked for the company. Nobody pretended you were an independent contractor. So much for progress. Today, the life of the working class is much more difficult, much more precarious than it was in the 1960s. Why? Because the rich who control the system realized they could become even richer by plundering their own workers. And they did, starting around the very late 60s, early 1970s. And while they were plundering the workers, the elite did a bang-up job of convincing us that others were causing our growing list of problems. Our problems were caused by minorities, homosexuals, feminists, and, of course, pinko-liberal college professors. Speaking of, Professor Richard Wolff did a fine job of showing just how the elite pulled this off, and why their scam can't last forever. Here he is, speaking at this year's Left Forum 2018.
I want to start by reminding you of a section of the Communist Manifesto that Karl Marx wrote 150 or whatever it is now, 170 years ago. He was stung at that time when he was writing that by an attack made against radicals, leftists, socialists. Not that many people used that language quite then. In fact, he was a bit daring even by using the word communist in the name of the manifesto he wrote. But people were attacking leftists those days on the grounds that, quote unquote, they are against the family. That if communists were in power, they would destroy the family. They are anti-family. I tell you that for two reasons. One, the sad reality that you also live in a society right now where the right wing likes to attack people like us as lacking family values. So something hasn't changed. And Marx's answer hasn't changed either. Marx's answer was, you accuse us of destroying the family? You must be kidding. We are not in the position to destroy their family. You've already done that. And what he meant was, you have put the proletarians of the world into situations where any family-type relationship is unobtainable and unsustainable. You're the perpetrator of the destruction of the family, not us. Keep in mind, though, that he had to face the fact that the people who had destroyed the family by creating economic conditions that made family unsurvivable had somehow blamed somebody else, namely them. And I'm now going to tell you a story of how pretty much the same thing is being done here and has been for 30 years, maybe 40, maybe 50. Okay. It starts here in the 1970s. This is a stylized story, so I'm not going to get all the details, but the basic story. For most of the years from 45 to 75, those 30 years after World War II, the United States economy was in a very peculiar situation. All the other capitalist countries of the world were destroyed. They couldn't compete. They couldn't produce anything. They had had horrific war on their country, whereas we had none, excepting Pearl Harbor, and that didn't do the damage that was suffered in France or Germany or Russia or any of the other countries that we would compete with. And so it was possible for the United States to produce for everybody, and therefore to pay rising wages because they could charge whatever they needed to recoup the rising wage. For those of you who don't know, the Marshall Plan that helped Europe had a little detail in it. We're going to give you all this money, you in Europe and elsewhere, on condition that you buy American products at whatever price the American producer chose to charge. We therefore ripped the Europeans off, made a huge amount of money, and were able to tell our workers, you don't need to be left-wingers or radicals, because in the 30s they were, because we'll raise your wages without class struggle, because we don't have to pay. We have those Europeans flat on their back. The important thing is that for those 30 years, American workers could be given what they had, not quite to the same degree, but enjoyed even earlier, what came to be called a family wage. Basically enough money to allow the woman, the wife, the mother, to stay at home, raise the children. Of course, poorer people couldn't have that luxury. Non-white people particularly could not have that luxury. But a lot of white people did. And then this lovely 30-year period, 1945 to 75, came to an end. The Europeans had the bad taste to rebuild their economies. The Japanese, equally, the bad taste to rebuild their economies. And, of course, being capitalist economies, they knew who they had to beat. They had to beat the United States. They had to produce what the United States produced, either better quality or a cheaper price, or best of all, both. Otherwise, they'd have no chance. In a world dominated by the United States, militarily, politically, culturally, if you're going to succeed as a capitalist in Japan or Germany or anywhere else, you better outdo the Americans. So they set themselves to do that, and by and large, they did. So by the 1970s, Americans were trading in their Fords and Chevys and buying VWs and eventually Hondas, and you know the rest. The United States could no longer get away with the game for those first 30 years. It had to change the game. And the 1970s was the time when the game got changed. And the basic change of the game was no more wage increases. We're going to compete with these foreigners, and we're going to do it by taking it out on you, the American working class. That's always the first choice. But not just that. We're going to do a multi-pronged effort. We're going to start using technology in a way we hadn't before, replacing expensive workers, which is a double benefit because not only do you save money on the worker you replace with a machine, but you make that worker compete with the remaining workers driving down the wages. It's a nice twofer. And so they did that. And finally, when neither of those strategies were available, they went two more steps. One, they moved the jobs out of the country to where the wages were cheap, and they moved the cheap workers from whatever country they were in here to have them available here and to press down the wages, all of which worked out real well. In short, the problems of capitalist enterprises starting in the 1970s were solved by ripping off two other institutions in our society. The first one was the state. I won't go through it all with you, but you do know 1970s is when we begin to have what came to be called the tax revolt of the American people. The reality was slashing the government. Mr. Reagan is the moment when you go from government as the solution to the problems of a depressed economy that comes out of the depression into government is the problem, not the solution. And the solution is to get rid of the government, cut the taxes, cut government spending, the mantra of the Republican Party and much of the Democratic Party ever since. So the capitalists are going to solve their problem by attacking the state so they don't have to pay taxes. The culmination of that, the tax cut of last December, 2017, which caps 40 years of reducing the burden on corporations by reducing it some more. Attack the government. Immobilize the government. But I said there were two institutions. What was the other institution that the capitalists attacked in order to solve their problems? And the answer is the family. When the wages go down because you have technological change, export of job, bringing in immigrants, when you do that, it's no longer possible, particularly for the white male, keep that in your head, to have a salary that can sustain the white female at home, being the homemaker, the mother, the emotional center of the family, etc., etc. She can't do that because you can't sustain your standard of living. The thing you've promised to one another when you got married, the thing you've promised to your children, you can't afford it anymore. For those of you who don't know, the real wage that had been rising for 100 years in this country before the 1970s stopped rising. It hasn't risen since. The real wage didn't go up anymore. Meanwhile, the name of what an American dream to a family meant kept rising. No way out. So what did American families do when they couldn't do this anymore? When the capitalist system said, we're going to save the profits of business, and we're going to stick it to the government, and we're going to stick it to the family. Families did two things in response to this attack. They didn't want to give up the American dream. They didn't want to. They had been told that that was their birthright. That was the American experience. That was the uniqueness, the exceptionalism of America, all of that. So American families tried to hold on in this impossible situation. So they did two things. Number one, they did more hours of work. More people in the family took jobs, and if they had a job, they did a second job or more hours. And the second thing they did, because it wasn't enough to take more hours, well, if your wages are going nowhere but you have to spend more money, then that woman has to go out to work. No more homemaker, mother, out. If you want to call that liberation, fine. That's like when you don't eat meat anymore and you switch from hamburger to hamburger helper and you tell yourself it's because of your diet. Doesn't mean it isn't true, but it means you're using a cover for something whose other reality you don't quite want to see. So Americans not only did more work to hold on to the American dream, but they sent the wife out. And when that wasn't enough, and it wasn't, basically because when the wife goes out to work, the family has new expenses it didn't have before. She has to have a whole other set of clothes for the job. And they maybe have to get another car in a country whose public transportation is as crappy as ours is, et cetera, et cetera. So the families did that last thing. They borrowed money like no working class has ever borrowed money before. We became pioneers, only not this time in a covered wagon going across the prairie. We became pioneers in a level of socialized consumer debt that is still the model for the world. Homeowner debt, car debt, credit card debt, and in the last 20 years, an added one, student debt. Fantastic. Load the population up. The only way you can now get that American dream is if you're working your ass off all the time and you're anxiety-ridden because of debts you know you can't pay. Of course you destroy the family. Are you kidding? Either one of those would have been enough. The combination, a knockout blow. Nobody's home enough. Everybody's catching a bit of yogurt on the way home as a substitute for a family dinner, right? Should be familiar to all of you. The family as an institution is destroyed over the last 40 years. Think about the difference between television programs, for those of you who've had a chance to look at them, that are 40 years old. The lovely husband going out to work with the briefcase and the tie, and the lovely wife at home who's waiting for his return as she grooms Spot the dog and plays with Dick and Jane on the lawn waiting for Daddy to come home. Isn't this charming? And the little foibles as they lead their wonderfully wonder-bred lives. Now fast forward 30 years, and what do you get? The dysfunctional family. The wife who makes jokes about the sexual inadequacy of the husband who repays her in kind. The children who roll their eyes, clearly understanding that their families, their parents, couldn't possibly have done what brought them into the world by the very nature of their awkward incompatibility. It's a cultural transformation, but it mirrors the economic reality. The family is done. Many of you are the products of these families. I don't want to upset you, but you already know that. As Harriet Fraud will tell you, the signs of it in people's decisions about whether or not to get married, whether or not to have children, it's already there. You already know it. You already know it. So let me conclude by telling you what the consequences are of the destruction of the family because it was needed by a capitalist system at a certain time to solve its problems that way. First, there was a genius appropriation of this process by the Republican Party in the United States and the complete missing of what's going on by the Democratic Party. Which, if you follow politics, shouldn't surprise you. This is a repetition over and over again, right up to the present. Here's what the Republican Party understood. Having helped the capitalists more than the Democrats to carry through all of these steps, cutting the taxes of the governments, making the government smaller, weakening the unions, all opening the globe for American expansion, all the things Republicans do more than Democrats, and having thereby smashed the family, the Republican Party realized that the way to save this situation for themselves was to position themselves as the champion of family values. That's genius. You destroy an institution, throw people into the horror of living out the destruction of what they had been led to expect, and then you say, vote for us, we'll bring it all back. The Democrats, moving with real skill into the level of complete stupidity, didn't see any of it. Didn't understand what's this family values, hypocritical, missed the whole thing. They thereby got the mass of people suffering what it means to have no family in a very rapacious capitalist universe where you have to work longer hours and you're tired and the family might have been that haven in a heartless world that Marx once referred to it as. It couldn't function that way. Well, people were distraught. And the Republicans came along and said, yes, the family is under attack, and it's what? They're not going to say it's the capitalists, that's them. So who is it? It's homosexuals. It's homosexuals. And anybody else they could think of other than the capitalist system. Anybody. Democrats, in fact, could be pointed out. So you turn the destruction of the family not only an asset for Republicans, but a loss for the Democrats. Without that move, the Republicans would not have been able to have power in the last 35 years of American society. No Trump, no Bush, none of it. That or Reagan. This is a linchpin. That's why this is so important to understand. Of American politics. Last point. There's a Achilles heel of all of this for the Republicans, and I don't want to leave you without making that clear. This embrace of family values has now been split inside the Republican conservative world. It's been split because a subpart of that world wants this to be the celebration not of all family values, but of white people's family values. And by white people's family values, they actually mean white male people's family values. That is, they want the party to become the party of reconstructing the time when, whether it's real or fantasy is really not the point here, but to reconstruct an America in which white men have their white wife back with Dick, Jane, and Spot so that they can come home from their insecure 80-hour-a-week job to enjoy what's left of the lawn in our ecologically mangled culture. But it's a serious image. They're going to bring it back. They have to argue that they're going to bring it back. And therein lies something which, if we're lucky, will be a fatal flaw. Because they can't. They're not bringing it back. Not because they wouldn't like to in some fantastic way, but because they cannot. And it is extremely dangerous to sell yourself to the mass of the American people as the deliverer of a package that never comes. You know how you feel about UPS and Amazon when it never comes after you've paid. Why can't it come? Because nothing is stopping the capitalists from their appointed rounds. They're moving jobs out of the country. They're bringing cheap labor in. All the noise about immigrants is undone as fast as it's passed. It's all political theater. If you pay attention, immigrants are being brought in because the farms can't run without them, because the hospitals need them for the work that's underpaid, all of the other things that Americans can't do. Or if you have Americans doing, which is much more important, they will be so angry and bitter that it's more dangerous for capitalism than to bring the damn immigrants back and live with the tensions that that involves. You can't bring it back. You can't deliver. The jobs aren't there, the incomes aren't there, and the capitalists are not playing in this game, which means the Republicans are working against the clock. They're promising they cannot deliver. Sooner or later, that blows up. And the only real question is whether the left, inside or outside the Democratic Party, assuming that inside they're still there, the question is whether we have the analytic and the organization to expose this story and to offer a whole new way of organizing society that can actually make emotional, personal, intimate, sexual relations among people a priority that the society respects and supports, rather than something thrown away when the difficulties of profitability lead corporations to do all that and let the chips fall where they may. Capitalism destroyed the family. And if that's a problem for you, which it is, then your anger and your hostility ought to go to where the problem starts. And it's not homosexuals. Thank you.
On New World Notes, we heard a nice lesson in what they used to call political economy by Professor Richard Wolff. He spoke at the Left Forum in New York in 2018. The audio recording courtesy of unwelcomeguests.net, and many thanks to them. You can find a free archive of our shows at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non carborundum, reminding you that you are not alone, and hoping you'll come back again next week. Ciao.